Welcome. My name is John Krall. I am the director of the Pulliam School of Journalism at Franklin College. And I am your host for the next hour for Indy Talks, which is the inaugural event of a year-long series of events to get Hoosiers talking to each other about things that matter. Our goal is to stimulate thoughtful conversation on social issues and to support a sense of community. This is a place where civic dialogue can thrive and where average folks can get real answers. Our partners in this enterprise are, of course, WFYI, the Athenaeum Foundation, the Indiana Historical Society, Indiana Humanities Council, Marion University, Indianapolis Marion County Public Library, Big Car Collective, the Arts Council of Indianapolis, Indy Center on Aging and Community, Christian Theological Seminary, IUPUI, and Spirit and Place. We'll be back on the other side. Thank you. Welcome. I am John Krall, director of the Pulliam School of Journalism at Franklin College, and you are listening to Indy Talks, the inaugural conversation of a year-long series of conversations around Indianapolis. We are going to be talking today about globalism in the Midwest. We are fortunate to have as our guest Richard C. Longworth, who is a fellow with the Chicago Council on Global Affairs. Before that, was an award-winning journalist with the Chicago Tribune, among other things. He's written a very provocative book called Caught in the Middle, America's Heartland in the Age of Globalism. I should say that we also will be taking calls during this program. If you've got a question, you want to join the conversation, please join us at 283-3586. You also can follow along on Facebook and by Twitter. Richard, are you on the line? Welcome to the program.
I'm here, John.
Good to have you here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us today. I'd like to start, we could, by talking a little bit about the genesis of your book, what you were setting out to do, what you hoped the book would accomplish.
The book was written as a result of a request by the Chicago Council on Global Affairs. They wanted me to identify subjects for something we were going to call the Heartland Papers, which was to identify the big issue of globalization that was affecting, say, Indiana, and find somebody, probably an academic in Indiana, to write about it. And then find a big issue in Ohio or Wisconsin that was affecting those states, and find somebody to write about it. Well, I spent some time traveling around, and I came back and I realized that there is no Indiana issue, and there is no Ohio issue or Wisconsin issue. Rather, the globalization was affecting the Midwest pretty much equally, all the way from western Pennsylvania across through Iowa, through Michigan to Minnesota, for the obvious reason that this part of the world, this place where we live, does basically two big things for a living, which is heavy industry and intensive agriculture, and globalization come along and tossed both of these right up in the air. I did find out, though, that almost nobody was thinking about this as a Midwestern problem. All thinking in Indiana was pretty much locked up within Indiana. Iowans were thinking about their problems, but were, you know, virtually unaware of what was going on next door in Illinois or Minnesota. So, I thought to myself, there's only one person who's really looking at this from a regional Midwestern point of view, and it's me, and I think I ought to write a book about it. And that's where it came from.
And I'd like to pick up on something, the regional notion. You use a somewhat distinctive map to make it clear to our listeners. The definition you use of the Midwest isn't confined to state lines, that the line actually cuts across some of the states. Could you talk about that a little bit so they can get a picture of what area we're talking about?
That's really the point I wanted to make, John, states in dealing with these problems of globalization, since it's a regional problem, states are next to irrelevant in dealing with it. And as I said, most of our thinking up until now, most of our policy has been confined within state lines. I wanted to get away from that.
Well,
so I define the Midwest as that part of the country that makes its living through industry and farming. And I defined it as the part of the country that originally took its character from the first big wave of east-to-west immigration from Northern Europe and New England. Of course, I mean, there's been a terrific amount of immigration from Latin America, especially the great movement north by African Americans before and after the war. But our basic character this sort of devotion to hard work, good government, education, rather serious. People sometimes accuse us of being a little stolid, a little dull. Okay. But that really defines this region. And that region extends from well, western Pennsylvania and upstate New York, all the way and probably across the Missouri River into eastern Nebraska and Kansas. In the map, I rather deliberately lopped off part of southern Ohio, southern Illinois, and southern Indiana, feeling that that is a different economy and also takes its character from a different immigration pattern. And I have to say, I was a little surprised. I expected some complaints from people in southern Indiana or southern Illinois and didn't get anything. I think people realize that those southern parts of these states, they are different.
Different in what ways? Could you elaborate on that just a little bit?
Yes, we've had less of an industrial history. Of course, we're getting more industry now, or southern Indiana is. Southern Illinois has almost none. More small-scale upland farming, and also taking its culture not from this east-west way from northern Europe, but more of a movement of people from Appalachia originally up the Missouri River, settling in these areas, more of a sense of independence, less community-minded possibly, more conservative, different politically. I think we see in voting patterns in these states that these parts of the states are very much likely to vote entirely different from, say, the cities and the more industrial cities further north in the states.
We've in your book, you talk also, and it's a point you made earlier in the conversation here, that the approaches to problem solving seem to stop at the state lines here, that there's no sort of regional response to globalization on the part of the Midwest. Can we talk first a little bit about the challenges that globalization has brought to the Midwest, and then talk about the ways that it's affecting the region?
Driving around the Midwest, and I put about 20,000 miles on the car reporting this, was quite a shock. Globalization, not just globalization, let's go back a bit. The decline of industry in the Midwest, of course, dates back to the Rust Belt days in the 60s and 70s, followed by the Japanese challenge. But globalization has pretty much made most of these trends permanent, has undermined what we do for a living. The result has been that the decay of so many major cities, Detroit, Cleveland, St. Louis, places like that, places that have lost more than half their population, about two-thirds of their jobs, and we're not entirely sure they're going to come back. Or smaller industrial towns, especially. The industrial age scattered these small industrial cities across the Midwestern landscape, and they are suffering terribly. I'm thinking here of places like, Anderson or Muncie, certainly Dayton and Mansfield in Ohio, Kokomo, Decatur and Danville in Illinois, you name them. The Midwest is loaded with these cities, and most of them truly are suffering. At the same time, you have, because of global pressures, agriculture now is in a global market. We're competing globally with farmers in places like Brazil for global markets in places like India and China. Bigness counts, and so you have the consolidation of farms, which has been going on for a long time, being speeded up, which has had a disastrous impact on rural areas and small farm towns who are losing their people and wondering really if they're going to be able to survive. All this ties together, and all of this is shared by cities in different states, small industrial cities in different states, farm towns across the region, but nobody is getting together to talk about this as a common problem. And instead, everybody is dealing with it on its own, within city lines, within county lines, and certainly within state lines. Let me give one quick example. Well, from where I sit here in Chicago, the Chicago economic region is really a four-state region. Starts up around Milwaukee, runs through Chicago, runs through northwestern Indiana. You know, they're even on Chicago time, and on into western Michigan up towards Grand Rapids. But there is virtually no common action, no common planning, no thinking about infrastructure, railroads, working together on education, working together on marketing ourselves. All of our thinking, even in this one single economic area, is divided among four states, and we can't seem to get these four acts together.
You are listening to Indy Talks, a program on WFYI 90.1 in Indianapolis, and we would like you to join the conversation by calling 283, area code 317-283-3586, so that you can take part in this interesting discussion about the Midwest and globalization. I'm John Kroll, director of the Pulliam School of Journalism at Franklin College, and we're talking with Richard C. Longworth, author of Caught in the Middle, which deals with how globalization is affecting the Midwest. Richard, before we get into some more specific questions, I'd like to ask one more sort of overarching one, given that you have traveled around the Midwest and have seen a lot of these places in action. You've mentioned that there are a lot of places that are really suffering. Are there places in the Midwest that actually are meeting the challenges of globalization right now that might provide models for us?
Yeah, several places. I think, you know, Chicago is doing, we have made this transition from being an old industrial city. And we went through our Rust Belt days, and we have kind of emerged on the other side as a global city with a great deal of prosperity. This is a partial solution. Half of Chicago is doing great. We're plugged into the global economy. The other half is not. The inner city population, a lot of the immigrants. So it is not a complete solution. Some cities, I think Indianapolis is one, certainly Minneapolis and Des Moines, that had less of an industrial legacy to overcome, seem to be doing better than, say, the old industrial cities like Detroit or Cleveland. Some smaller places in Indiana, I'd certainly mention two. One is Warsaw, which is, of course, the world capital of the orthopedics industry. And the other is Columbus, Cummins Engine City, are both doing very well and definitely worth the trip. You find these isolated places. You find some places that have benefited greatly from local philanthropy. Columbus, of course, is an example. So is Grand Rapids, Michigan, which has transformed itself with money from the Amway families into kind of a medical research place. You know about Kalamazoo, Michigan, with the Kalamazoo Promise, where people, rich families there, promised that anybody who graduated from high school in Kalamazoo would be guaranteed a free ride to any state college or university in Michigan, which has really revitalized Kalamazoo. There are other places like this. So the light is not extinguished by any means. There are bright spots. They're simply too few and too far between.
And it sounds like a large part of it is that they're not connected, too. That the, even if you have these bright spots, one of the themes in your book is that, that, and one you alluded to earlier, is that, for example, in Chicago's case, it's part of a four-state region, but the four states aren't thinking or working together, so it's difficult to have success build upon success. Is that a fair assessment?
That's quite true. People who have a lot in common simply can't seem to get together across state lines. In Indiana, you know, I think Richmond would certainly be should be considered part of the Dayton economic region, but it's not. There's very little conversation across that state line for seemingly no reason at all, except that this state line, which after all was drawn 220 years ago, is there.
And real quickly, we're headed toward a break here. I'd like to ask and get us to start thinking about the fact that that we may want to talk about whether some of the political arrangements or governmental arrangements still make sense in the 21st century, if that's a place we need to go. I'd like to remind our listeners that they can join the conversation. I can see on my screen here that we have several in line waiting to join us. We hope the rest of you will come in, too, by calling 317-283-3586. We're going to take a break right now, and we'll be back in about 75 seconds. Thank you.
Programming is made possible on 90.1 by your membership and by Green Savings Indy. Their coupon book features over 65 coupons for green and environmental products and services around town. More about becoming green at greensavingsindy.com.
The 11th annual Ice Miller Indie Wine Fest, hosted by WFYI and presented by Clark Appliance, is Friday, February 5th at the Indiana Roof Ballroom. An elegant evening of delectable wines and delicious food. General admission tickets are available for $50 and connoisseur tickets for $100 at Conn's Fine Wines and Spirits at 52nd and Keystone or at WFYI.org. Sponsored by Ice Miller, Clark Appliance, Barrington Jewels, the Indiana Wine Grape Council, and Conn's Fine Wines and Spirits.
Well, the forecast for this afternoon, sunny skies with a high reaching 34 degrees. For tonight, clear skies with a low of 22. For tomorrow, mostly sunny with a high reaching the upper 30s. It's currently 30 degrees with fair skies. You're listening to WFYI 90.1 FM and HD1, Indianapolis. For your information, the time is 12:21.
Hi, I'm John Krall, director of the Pulliam School of Journalism at Franklin College, and you're listening to Indie Talks here on WFYI. We're talking with Richard Longworth, the author of Caught in the Middle, a book about how globalization is affecting the Midwest. We're taking calls. We have one on the line right now. Brent in Brownsburg wants to talk about what the solutions are to globalization. Brent, are you there? Brent? Apparently, Brent, either we're having some technical problems or Brent has not joined us. While we're waiting to make the connection with Brent.
I can hear Brent.
You can hear Brent? Oh,
yes,
good.
I'm here.
Okay, Brent.
Hello.
Hello. Well, Brent's question is, what are solutions to globalization?
Hello, Mr. Longworth?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Yes, I've read.
Are you there, Brent?
Well, I'm afraid we've lost him.
Yeah, we seem to have cut out. He offs.
Yeah, I've read your book and enjoyed it very much. And I know that you've said that you think the solutions are probably education. And I know that there are thousands of people with college degrees that are out of work. And the older you get and the more education you have, the more likely you'll lose your job because of the cost. And that's primarily because we're exporting so many of these jobs to other countries, or we're importing cheap labor from countries like India and China and other countries. So one of my solutions, and I'd like for your comments on this, is for the federal government, because it'd take a federal law to repeal all sales taxes and replace the lost revenue with an import tax tariff on imported labor and manufactured goods.
Brent, I'd like to thank you for that question, because it sets up a couple of the areas that we wanted to talk about during this hour. Richard, would you mind taking a crack at first the education piece and then the idea of tax policy, if possible?
Okay, I do want to make the point, John. This is a hard time to be talking about all these, because we're in the middle of this recession and the economic downturn that has hit a lot of people, including people in the Midwest, very hard. I think the points I want to make here is that what I'm talking about, this impact of globalization on the Midwest, existed before the recession began, and if we don't do something about it, it's going to be here after it ends. So what is the solution here? Education is definitely part of it. Innovation, somewhere along the line, we lost the knack here in the Midwest of innovating, of inventing. We have been earning our living on old-style industry that is being outsourced now. We can raise the drawbridge. We can cut ourselves off from the rest of the world if we want to, but that is no solution. Globalization is with us every bit as much as the old industrial age was with us, and if we will make of it what we will. So we have to learn how to cope. Innovation is part of it. Investing in new industries is part of it. Probably letting go of the old industries is part of it. Educating our kids for this new world is part of it. This is no real mystery. Other countries in the world are doing it. Other states in the United States are doing it. We know what has to be done. The Midwest has just been a little slower to do this. We need to create jobs here in the Midwest. So all of these graduates that come out of the wonderful universities like Purdue and the University of Indiana stay here in the Midwest. I think you've seen the statistics. that the college enrollment in Indiana is right up there at the top of all the states in the nation. But the percentage of people in Indiana with college degrees is near the bottom. In other words, you're educating an awful lot of people who grab their diplomas and go to California or New York to put that education to use. We need these jobs here in the Midwest to attract these smart people. Obviously, a long-term prospect.
If I could step in there real quickly, that's been a problem Indiana's been concerned about for a long time. It sounds like there may be some parallels in other Midwestern states as well. We call it brain drain.
Every Midwestern state has this brain drain.
How do we solve it, do you think? What
jobs?
Jobs?
And sure. People who get good educations, smart people, creative people, want to put that education and their brains to use. They're not going to stay in Indiana or Illinois or Iowa if there aren't the kind of jobs there that challenge them intellectually. They'll go where brains are rewarded. And it's only the creation of new jobs that are going to do it. We often talk about how education is necessary for economic development. That's absolutely true. But economic development is also necessary for education. Nobody's going to hang around the Midwest if there's nothing really challenging for them to do.
I'd like to take our next caller. Max in Indy wants to talk about the effects of globalization, at least I think in the way that people are perceived. Max, are you on the line with us?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Good.
Okay.
Welcome to the program.
Thanks for taking my call.
Certainly.
And my question is, I want to ask the guest, if you have a comment or if you are surprised by what I have found, your topic is very interesting to me, because while you're talking about globalization, I'm thinking, as a guy who makes foreign language materials for schools around the country, right now mainly we do Spanish for K-8, but this week we're starting into other industries, and yet what I find is that people around here have a terrible reaction just to the word foreign language. I run into it all the time. I'm not talking about school courses.
I think you're absolutely right. One of our problems here is that we are in the center of the country. We're a long ways away from anywhere else. We are 1,000 miles away from any place where you really need to use a foreign language. I used to live in Brussels, and this was in the days before cable television, but on an average evening, we could get television broadcasts from 5 different countries and 5 different languages right in our home there. We knew we lived among other people and other countries. We knew we lived in the world. In the Midwest, this is hard to know. I think everybody, if you say, do we trade, do we have relations with the rest of the world, people say, yeah, but we don't feel it every day. It really takes an act of the intellect and an act of the imagination to understand how we tie into the rest of the world and why these languages you're trying to teach are going to be necessary.
I'd like to step in here real quickly and ask other people to join. I see we have a line of callers, but ask others to join us by calling 317-283-3586. I'm John Kroll, director of the Pulliam School of Franklin College. You're listening to WFYI and Indy Talks right now. We're talking with Richard Longworth, who is a fellow with the Chicago Council on Global Affairs and is the author of the provocative book Caught in the Middle. Richard, you in your book, and I want to pick up on Max's theme here a bit, you talk about how foreign-born citizens actually add to the vitality of communities, and that in some ways communities that resist them or don't make them welcome do so at their peril. Could you talk about that a little bit and expand on that theme?
Yes, I would. Immigrants are both cause and effect of prosperity. Immigrants go places because there are jobs there. Somebody comes, gets a good job, phones home and says, hey, there are jobs here, and you all come. Chicago has definitely benefited from this. I mean, our city, I think, has been revitalized largely because of the impact of all those PhDs from India and China and all those workers from Mexico. It's new blood. It's new life. On the other hand, if there aren't jobs in a place, immigrants won't go there. Cleveland used to be 50% foreign-born. Now it's less than 4%. They just can't draw in people. So having a lot of immigrants is a validation of a sort that something's going right. Of course, when the immigrants arrive, then they inject new energy into the economy by opening stores, buying houses, getting jobs. It's a positive thing. Now, this is tough to talk about for two reasons. First off, the Midwest is traditionally the whitest, most homogeneous part of the United States. We have not traditionally been welcoming to outsiders, and a lot of places are going through great upheavals, coming to terms with this new immigration. The second issue, of course, is the whole question of illegal immigration, undocumented immigration.
And I should step in real quickly and just inform our listeners, there's a bill before the Indiana General Assembly right now that would reduce undocumented aliens in the state. It's the third year we've had one in front of it, and it's going to probably generate some controversy. I'm sorry to interrupt, Richard, but I wanted to let him know.
It's a hugely controversial issue, and I know about that bill. The fact is that we are losing population generally in the Midwest. We need the new blood. We need the new ideas. We need something to jolt us out of our business as usual thing. So we need all the immigrants we can get. But the fact that a lot of these are undocumented just grates on the Midwestern soul somehow. We're law-abiding folks, and we have a very hard time getting over this, and rightly so. The solution is not to pass a law banning illegal immigrants or trying to keep them out. You're just asking for witch hunts there. The solution, of course, is rewriting and reform of the nation's whole immigration laws. These laws are broken. They clearly don't work. The Midwest, of all the regions in the country, needs as many immigrants as we can get, and we all ought to be pushing for a rational immigration law that would solve this so we don't have to rely on people who have to break the law to get here.
I think we've got time before the break to take one more caller. I think we've got Stephen in Indianapolis who wants to talk about what the state can do to better educated citizens. Stephen, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Good to have you on the program. Thank you for joining us. What's your question?
Yeah, he continues, and I agree, to repeat how important education is to, you know, a lot of these problems. And yet we as a state are, due to the economic situation, forced to minimize some of our contribution to the educational institution. How do we get it across at the, you know, and get people to understand that this is an investment towards our future? This is the principle of our investment. And also in relation to education prior to college. I'll take my call off the air.
I think the way to do this is to get through to people that education is that important. For some reason, for a lot of reasons, there is no real political support for education, especially higher education, in too much of the Midwest. This makes it possible for state governments and local governments, like what's happening in Indiana and every other state, including Illinois, to cheap out higher education, to cut the state higher education budgets at a time when higher education is quite literally our meal ticket towards the future. What can we do then to do this? Well, I think we have a massive education problem, if you will, simply educating Midwesterners that they've got to get smart and they've got to get creative here. I think there's room for a lot more cooperation between colleges and universities. They're traditionally locked up among themselves. They compete among themselves. There's very little reason for this in this day and age. I'd like to see not only Indiana and Purdue cooperating, but these two schools cooperating a lot more with Michigan and Michigan State and Ohio State and the University of Illinois on joint projects to combine their considerable brain power to the greater benefit of the Midwest. We need, of course, a lot fewer school districts. We have many too many school districts. We need a reform of education. We need to make more use of online education. Schools, say, in Rochester, Indiana, have done this with considerable benefit. We have to get extremely imaginative. We have to start thinking about whether 4 years equals a college degree, maybe three. We have to make better use of our community colleges. I see that in the Star today that enrollment at Ivy Tech is at record levels. Good, but we have to fund them, and we have to really think about where Ivy Tech fits into this future. We need a whole new rethinking of education in the Midwest.
And to some degree, I'm going to take us to the break by talking about this a bit. We're looking in Indiana right now at some pretty severe budget pressures, not as great as other states across the country, obviously, you know, California and New York probably being the worst examples. But the Indiana General Assembly, both chambers just adopted a constitutional amendment to cap property taxes here in the state. We're looking
Was that passed the Senate? I haven't
seen Yeah, it passed yesterday afternoon. Okay. So it'll be headed to the ballot for Hoosiers to vote on this November. We're also looking at deep cuts in the K-12 budget, deep cuts for the state's universities. Is this the way that we should be responding to these challenges that you're talking about? Are tax cuts the solution, or, you know, if they are the solution, or budget cuts, I guess I should say, if budget cuts aren't the solution, or if they are the solution, where should the money be cut? In education, I'm presuming you would say no.
I would definitely say no. I think you want to cut funding for education only if you want to guarantee that the Midwest is not going to recover. We're in a serious problem here. I think we have to remember that the American South, between the end of the Civil War and pretty much the invention of air conditioning, went through a bad century. And the Midwest is, you know, in the third or fourth decade of what could be a very bad century. This is serious business. Education and schools are one of the things that's going to get us out of this. And to cheap out education, to cut spending on education, to guarantee that even when times get good, you can't use property taxes to fund education and build up education, is simply to condemn states that adopt measures like this to pretty much perennial poverty.
Now, is the political dialogue at some level failing us here? I mean, my sense as a veteran journalist is that we're doomed with politics to keep repeating the 1980 election and having Jimmy Carter and Ronald Reagan arguing with each other over and over and over again, saying one side saying taxes are good, the other side saying taxes are bad. Is there a way we can change the terms of that dialogue? And
not as the political conversation is set up now in the Midwest, John. And again, we get back to this business of states. My argument is that if we look to state governments, if we look to Springfield or Indianapolis or Columbus for all our solutions, they aren't going to be there. States are, because their boundaries were drawn 220 years ago, an entirely different time, because they embrace areas of such different interests, states are almost incompetent to deal with these. A lot of the solutions here are going to have to come from cities, from regions, that's metro regions and rural regions with something in common. People have to sit down and figure out new ways of supporting themselves, of earning their living, of taxing themselves, if they're going to cope with this. So long as we keep relying on state governments and state legislatures who have almost a knee-jerk reaction to capping taxes at a time when investment is desperately needed, we are going to remain in the situation we are now, which isn't good.
You're listening to Indy Talks on WFYI. I'm John Kroll, director of the Pulliam School of Journalism at Franklin College. Our guest is Richard Longworth, talking about globalism and the Midwest. We're going to take a quick break right now, but I want to assure all of our callers who are waiting in line that we will get to you. We also would like to invite others who are listening to join the conversation by dialing in to 317-283-3586. Thank you.
The Indiana Broadcasters Association is offering scholarships for students interested in broadcasting. Scholarships are open to high school seniors or current college students with a GPA of at least 3.0. Students must have credits in telecommunications or broadcast journalism and plan on attending an IBA member school. For an application, call WFYI at 636-2020 or visit our website at WFYI.org. The application deadline is March 5th.
The weather is brought to you by BarringtonJewels.com. Expect sunny skies this afternoon with a high reaching 34 degrees. For tonight, clear skies with a low of 22. For tomorrow, mostly sunny with a high reaching the upper 30s. It's currently 30 degrees and fair skies. You're listening to WFYI 90.1 FM and HD1, Indianapolis. For your information, the time is 12:40.
I am John Krall, director of the Pulliam School of Journalism at Franklin College, and you are listening to Indie Talks on WFYI. Our guest is Richard Longworth, author of the book Caught in the Middle, which talks about the pressures of globalization and how they're affecting the Midwest. We've had a very, very patient caller by the name of Mike who has been waiting to get on the line with a question about how we create jobs in the Midwest and deal with the issues of competition. Mike, are you with us now?
Yes.
Good to have you. Thank you for waiting. Thank you for your patience.
Okay. Mr. Longworth, you said at the beginning of the discussion that the Midwest states are not cooperating with each other in generating jobs. And I would agree on that because what they're doing is they're competing with each other to get these jobs with what I call corporate welfare, tax abatements and tax increment financing and tax credits, et cetera. And the main problem with this is that it's shifting the cost to other taxpayers, and the worst problem is that it's creating a lot of poverty wage jobs. Many of these jobs are $8, $9 an hour jobs because they're warehouse jobs and they're retail jobs, and our best jobs that's been created probably here in the state of Indiana is at Honda, and they're only paying $14 an hour, and that's about half of what General Motors and Chrysler paid. So, you know, I think we either need to get rid of these incentives or they got to start paying a living wage, at least a minimum wage of $14 an hour for any job that takes tax incentives.
Well, Mike, I think you hit on the key issue right at the start there, and that's this competition between states to get these factories and to give them, long-term tax breaks to enable people to draw in industries that pay bad jobs. This is a fool's game. Everybody is competing for these industries. There aren't that many of them. So going out and trying to recruit industries from outside doesn't work. What I think we have to do is kind of go back to what we did 100 years ago when we pretty much invented the industrial age in this country with all the inventions. All the innovations that spun off the Midwest. We have to get innovative again. We have to encourage our kids to come up with good ideas. We have to support them when we do. We have to have the venture capital and the business services for them. We have to arrange so all those good ideas that spin off, say, the grants that go to Purdue, stay here in the Midwest instead of having to go to California to be exploited. We have to grab hold of the new industries of the future, the bioscience, biotech, energy industries, industries that spin off this terrific freshwater resource that we have in the Great Lakes. Now, none of this can be done by states acting alone. You know, the wind energy, the wind blows across state lines, the Great Lakes laps at the shores of eight different states. There's no point in states doing this alone. We do have to work together, market together, come up with venture capital pools, have to get our universities working together to do this. Again, it is a long-term thing. If I may, John, put in a little mention here of my organization, what we're trying to do.
Please.
I think the point is that the Midwest, there's virtual ignorance in each state of what's going on in the other states. We don't talk to each other. We don't plan together. What we have done here at the Chicago Council is set up called the Global Midwest Initiative. That its aim basically is to get a Midwestern conversation going, to be a place where people can come together from around the Midwest to share common problems, tell common war stories, and hopefully come up with some common solutions. Our website is www.globalmidwest.org. And we're just getting started on this, but amazingly, there is no other place in the Midwest where this kind of conversation is possible.
We've gotten a question online that follows on this theme. It comes from Ben, who wanted to know, what if any kind of changes need to be made to state commerce laws to better unify the region?
I think the... What would be a great help is for the states to get together through the Midwest Governors Association or others and try to harmonize those laws. Right now, as the previous caller, Mike, pointed out, states are competing. Their laws with their regulations to cut taxes. You know, the competition, Indiana is not competing with Indiana, with Illinois or Michigan or Ohio anymore. Real competition is 10,000 miles away, and we are all in the same boat here, so it would help a lot if we all started rowing together, which means getting together, harmonizing tax laws, trying to make sure our sales taxes don't clash with each other, trying to get common incentives, common marketing, for instance. Every state, I think, has its own office in Shanghai, and you know, the folks in Shanghai aren't entirely sure where Illinois and Indiana even are. What we should be doing is one big Midwestern office to try and get some of this investment here in the Midwest. This is going to involve states working together. Midwestern states just hate to work together. They're all jealous of each other. But the time when we could afford this kind of jealousy is past.
We have another caller on the line. I'd like to remind our listeners that you're listening to Indy Talks in a discussion with the author Richard Longworth, whose book Caught in the Middle deals with questions of globalization and how they're affecting the Midwest. If you'd like to join the conversation, please call 317-283-3586. We have a bit of a line, but we will try to get as many people in as possible. We have a caller on the line right now. Don in Greenwood has a question about the consolidation of local government. Don, welcome to the program. Good to have you.
Thank you very much.
What's your question?
Well, I was wondering what Mr. Longworth might think that local government can do. I've served on a study committee here in Greenwood where we're proposing to merge the city of Greenwood with the township to our west, White River Township, along Highway 37, to make more efficient government. It would be the sixth largest state in Indiana if we would do this, and to make us more competitive. What does he think local government can do?
Sixth largest city.
I bet you're having a real struggle getting that job done, aren't you?
We have a lot of people who they don't want change. They want to go back to the way things used to be.
I hear that everywhere, and the fact is we can't do that, and we can't stay the same. We are either going to have to move with the times or going to be left behind. And it's hard, very hard for people to accept that. I don't minimize that. But, yes, consolidation of government, we have in the Midwest all these county governments that may have made sense at one time 200 years ago when you couldn't travel very far. But we've got too many counties. We've got too many city governments. We have too many township governments. We have too many school districts. Consolidation of all this only makes sense, if only because then you can start to, once you do that, you look at the counties or township next door and think, what do we have in common with them, and how can we work with them towards a common end?
Could we talk a little bit about the cost, to some degree, of that approach? You write movingly in your book about your visits back to your hometown, Boone, and how things have changed. Here in Indiana, often when a school closes, a community, if not dies, begins to linger on life support for a long time. Are those the kinds of costs of change that we're just going to have to be willing to absorb, that communities that functioned in the 19th and for part of the 20th century just no longer have a vital role?
John, it's hard to say. People don't want to hear this, but this is true. The fact, of course, this has been going on for a long time. I spent an interesting morning once going to Bethlehem in New York. These are two little towns, were two little towns in southeastern Iowa that once were fairly substantial little farming towns and now are nothing except a church surrounded by a cornfield. This has been going on for a long time. The fact is, that every place you can think of, every town, every big city, every little farming town, got started for some economic reason. There was an economic purpose because of farms, mines, transport, ports, factories, why it's there. And if this economic purpose goes away, if the farms consolidate or the mines close or the factory closes up, then these places have to reinvent themselves, have to find a new economic purpose for existence, or they are going to die out. And this is happening in the Midwest. And as people do leave these small places, yes, schools are going to close because they just can't be kept open. We would like to protect every little civilization there, but we simply can't do it. And so places are going to be consolidated, and a lot of them are going to lose. It is not a stagnant, permanent world. Again, in my journalistic background, I spent 4 years living back in the old Soviet Union, back in Moscow, when they tried to keep everything the same. It was a stagnant society, and we know what happened to the Soviet Union. One, change is inevitable. Nothing stays the same. Things change has come to the Midwest, and we have to deal with it, not deny it.
We've gotten a lot of questions online. I'm going to deal with one that I think is pretty specific. And that asks, how is Indianapolis doing compared to other large Midwestern cities? And what sort of things can Indianapolis do to get ahead of the competition?
Indianapolis is doing pretty well. In fact, I saw some statistics that of all the growth in Indiana, all of it is accounted for by Indianapolis and the surrounding counties. It is thriving. It's got a lot of good industries there. Indianapolis has done pretty well. As I mentioned, there are a few other places. Columbus, Ohio, certainly is doing better than all the other cities in Ohio. What you can do in Indianapolis is to sit down and think to yourself, we're not part of the Midwestern economy anymore. We're not part of the Indiana economy. We're part of the global economy. We exist in something. Our economy has burst the borders of the United States. So how do we as a city compete and thrive? What do we have to do over the next 20 or 30 years really to establish our competitive situation here? And really quick, though, you get the questions of infrastructure, of transport. You get immediately into education. How are you going to educate your kids? What do your kids need to do to thrive? Where do universities like Indiana and Purdue or Butler fit into this, and how can they strengthen your community? You begin to think of Indianapolis and surrounding territory as kind of a region unto itself, and possibly a little bit less as part of Indiana. At the same time, the same conversation should be going on, say, in Anderson and Muncie, which exist over there, or in places like Fort Wayne, or certainly in northwestern Indiana. Where do they fit in? How do they relate to the state of Indiana, and how do they relate to this big economic engine to the north that's called Chicago?
Is the solution here, and we've got a caller on the line that I want to get to pretty quickly, but I want to follow up on what you've just said, is the solution diversification, or is it building what are often called centers of excellence? Or is that an unfair either-or question? Should it be a both-and?
I think it is. Warsaw, for instance, is a center of excellence. It's an absolute example of what's called a cluster economy. You've got all these terrific orthopedic companies there, and that's what makes Warsaw tick. So much of Indiana, like Michigan and Ohio, were centers of excellence in the auto industry, and now that's gone away. So they're going to have to either find a new thing to do or diversify. Chicago's been fortunate in that we had a more diversified economy. We often think of that as one of our strengths as opposed, say, to Detroit, which was a single-minded economy. And when that its big industry went down, so did the city.
We have had a very patient caller waiting here, George in Indianapolis. I'd like to welcome you to the program and remind everyone that they're listening to Indy Talks. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to the author, Richard Longworth, who's the author of the book Caught in the Middle, about globalization in the Midwest. George, are you on the line with us? Good to have you. George, are you here? George? Could you, George, could you turn your radio off, please? We're getting some feedback. Okay, well, I don't think we've got George with us. We will deal with that question. There's a question I wanted to deal with that concerns the other reference to a middle in your book that's more alluded to than anything else, and that's really about what globalization is doing to the middle class. In your book, you talk about how they're creating high-end jobs and that there are going to be other jobs, and what kind of pressure this might create for the Midwest, which long has seen itself as sort of the bastion of mid-class values and middle American values. Could you talk a little bit about what we're likely to see and what some of the changes that might occur would be?
John, this is a huge problem. I mentioned earlier that about half of Chicago is doing pretty well and the other half isn't. That's an example of this. We have people in Chicago who have plugged into this global economy are doing very well, and you have others who have simply been left behind. Now, a lot of the people who are left behind are the ones who used to work in these heavy industries we had here, the steel mills, TV, radio factories, all that. And when those closed, they were simply left. The Midwest and New England, too, to a degree, have what's been called an hourglass economy. That is, there's a lot of people at the top that are really doing very well, and a lot of people at the bottom who are doing very badly, and not much in between. And this is such a change from this Midwest middle-class economy that we used to have of heavy industry, a lot of it due to the big corporations, the big unions. Guys who may not have had a high school education, who carried their lunch in lunch buckets, who work on assembly lines or the blast furnaces, but lived a middle-class way of life. They owned their own homes, had a cottage by the lake, had a couple of cars. They were middle-class in every sense, and that's disappeared. These middle-class workers haven't disappeared. They're still there. It's just that the middle-class jobs have gone away. And globalization does have this impact. It has a divisive impact that we've seen between cities and small towns, between well-educated people and uneducated people, between the rich and the poor, between countries and within countries. Globalization is a divisive force, and it certainly has divided the Midwest, and I think we're seeing this playing out in a lot of this political divisiveness that you were talking about earlier.
We've got just a little bit more than a minute left. I'd like to talk a little bit about sort of what the solutions are to this. It sounds like the big overarching themes, at least we've talked about in this hour, are education and cooperation across state lines. We've got about a minute left. Are there any other magic bullets out there, or are those the two big ones?
Those are the two big ones, but the first thing we have to do is precisely what you're doing with this Indy Talks thing, is to talk about it, is to educate Midwesterners that your granddaddy's Midwest is gone. What we did for a living all those years isn't here. We have to earn our living in new ways. We have to reinvent ourselves across the Midwest, and first we have to start talking about it, coming up with the issues, and from the issues will emerge the solutions. So what you all are doing with this Indy Talks is terrific, and I wish you well.
Thank you. You have been listening to Richard Longworth, author of the book Caught in the Middle. I'm John Krall, director of the Pulliam School at Franklin College. We've been glad to share this hour with you and the inaugural program of Indy Talks. Thank you.